Right, good. Welcome back. Okay, so that was all kind of introductory material, giving you a feel for what this is all about. Now we're going to start diving into some details. And before we discuss speech itself, we have to, of course, ask ourselves, what is sound? Because speech is mainly some kind of special sound, right? So what do we understand about sound? Okay, so what is sound? What is sound? Surrounded by it. What is it? Anybody? Vibration, I'm hearing. Vibration in anything in particular? In the air. Does it have to be in the air? Not necessarily. Could be in any medium. Absolutely right. Good. Indeed. It's a vibration in a medium. And typically, it's vibration in the air. Okay. So, it's energy. It's acoustic energy, that's sound. It's a mechanical wave because it's something, it's energy that's propagating through a medium. They're vibrations, thank you, perfect, travelling through the medium. And essentially, if it's air, it's variations in air pressure. So we've got waves of air pressure which propagate through the environment. So air pressure is something that we all understand, right? We know that at ground level we have a lot of air, the density is high, so the air pressure is high. And as we go up into the atmosphere, there are fewer and fewer molecules, the density is lower, the air pressure is lower. So air pressure relates to the density of the medium, and we measure it in various ways, atmospheres, pascals, millibars, what have you. So we can formally measure air pressure, and then we can ask about how air pressure might change as it propagates. So let's have a change in air pressure. Right, that woke a couple of you up. So what did I just do? Right, I generated a very large variation in air pressure in the loudspeakers, which I guess are up there, and that propagated through this room, the environment. It hit your ears and you perceived it as a kind of explosion. This sudden change in air pressure you heard as some kind of explosion. So we can visualize this very nice thing off Wikipedia here, which just shows what happens. So we basically have equal air pressure, there's a sudden change, and that propagates out. So what you just heard is just like throwing a pebble into a pond of water and seeing the ripples spread out. Okay, same process. Okay, now what we're interested in is how fast that all happens. So the sound propagates, but it propagates at a certain speed or velocity, and that is a function of the density. So in air, in this environment, the sound waves propagate at 300 meters a second. Okay, so we can easily calculate how long it takes then a sound to get from here to the far corner or to the other side of a football field. It's relatively slow compared to the speed of light. The speed of sound is incredibly low. But it's the higher the density of the medium, the faster the acoustic vibrations propagate. So in water, it's considerably faster, and in steel, it's considerably faster again. Okay? So these are all very good transmission mediums for sound. If you've been diving or swimming and you've got your head under the water, you realize you can hear perfectly well. But those sounds are coming at you much faster than when you pop your head above the water and you hear the sound coming through the air. Okay? So sound pressure level is what's defined as a local pressure variation or deviation. The SI unit is the Pascal, and it's measured using this formula here, which is a log formula, because the perception of sound is nonlinear. In other words, for twice the energy, we perceive it as being significantly louder. So that's because it's log, it has no base, so that's why there's a ratio here. So we define 0 dB sound pressure level as the limit of human hearing, the smallest sound that a human being can hear. That's defined as zero, and everything else is a ratio in decibels above that. Okay, and it's a log scale, but we talk about it in terms of dBs. dBs SPL decibels. Okay, so I don't know if you can make that out from the back, but this is one of these charts you'd often see on a school physics wall, which basically gives you the amplitude or the sound pressure level of different sounds from the threshold of hearing. If you look at the right, bottom right, we've got the zero SPL going right up to the jet engine at 130, 140 dB, right? And what's interesting here, sort of environmental sounds, is that speech is sitting at around 55, or between 50 and 60 dBs SPL. Okay? So that's just an average. I'm sure you've all experienced people who have got an incredibly loud voice. They'll be higher up. So it just puts it in perspective as a human activity, sitting pretty much in the middle of the range in terms of the loudness. Okay, so how do we know all this? Well, there are things called SPL meters, and if you're an environmental officer who, you know, maybe is called out because your neighbours are making a lot of noise, and they, to do anything, they'd have to come and measure the amount of noise, and they would use an SPL meter. Or maybe traffic, determining whether traffic's making too much noise in an urban environment. This is the kind of instrumentation they would use, an SPL meter. And we can do all this in PD, really. This is a really, really simple example. So if I jump into a PD example of a sound pressure level meter. So it's rather small, but hopefully you can see what's going on here. This is just to demonstrate a couple of things. One is that the top box there labelled ADC, that's an analog to digital converter. So that is basically listening to my microphone. So I'm using my laptop here and the microphone somewhere at the bottom of the screen, which is why I'm leaning forwards. That is actually being, the amplitude is being measured in MIDI levels, which that's converted then into, that's measured in dB. That's then converted to fit this, what's called a VU meter, or SPL meter. Okay, so you can see the amplitude going up and down. Right, so, by the way, I forgot to say, all these examples are available to you. It's not on MOL yet, but it will be shortly. There'll be a zip file which contains all the examples that I'm showing in the lectures, so that you've got loads and loads of PD to play around with and experiment with. And all these things I'm demoing, you can use on your own machines. Okay, whoops. So back into PowerPoint. So, as I say, the sound propagates by varying the air density from high and low, and so we can visualize that as a waveform. So the top there, we've got the change in density, but at the bottom, underneath the sort of sine wave-looking thing, that is an expression. That was what we would call the time domain representation, or a waveform. So it's just showing over time the variation in the amplitude of the variation in air pressure. Okay, so that's a waveform. So a waveform is one way of looking at a signal or a sound, how the sound pressure level changes over time. But there's another way we can look at it, which is to say, what energy is there at different frequencies? Okay, so traffic noise will have energy at all kinds of frequencies, low frequencies, high frequencies. A whistle has energy at one frequency. And the human voice has energy at many frequencies, and we'll see all that next week. So what we can do then is display something, a different kind of representation. In this case, it's called the spectrum. Okay, so whereas before we had amplitude against time, for the spectrum we've got amplitude against frequency. And what this bar chart shows for that particular signal is that there's sort of energy at pretty much every frequency, low frequency on the left, high frequency on the right. And anybody who's into hi-fi, and you know, you recognize this as a kind of graphic equalizer kind of representation. Okay. Okay. Yeah. So I think I've said all of that. Right. Oh, yeah. So we can, of course, we can demo something exactly like that in PD. And this is, allows me to introduce you to a particular function which you will probably find useful. So here we've got a very small piece of PD which is initially... Oh no, wrong one. Okay, the real-time analysis. This one. There we go. Now this is going to be loud, so let me just cut the volume right down. Because what we've got now, I had the analog to digital converter before. This one is showing we've got the digital to analog converter, so this is going to send sound out through the loudspeakers. And if I switch it on, okay, we've got a tone. Not make it too loud. And here I can change the frequency of the tone. Real time audio generation. But what I really want to demonstrate is the following. There's a function here called WS probe, which is waveform spectrum probe. So it's a piece of PD which you can use to kind of look at the signals you might be playing around with. So if I open that, and all I have to do is click on it, we've now got two displays. The top one is the waveform, and the bottom one is the spectrum. So if I change the frequency, okay, so you just see the direct relationship here between what you're hearing and what you're seeing. So we've got the waveform here and the spectrum here. It's a sine wave. And a sine wave has all the energy at one frequency, which is why we've got that just big spike. Okay? Right. So that's just to introduce you to WS probe. This lecture is lots of backwards and forwards between PD and the slides. Okay. So, this notion of frequency is obviously very important, and the energy at different frequencies. So we need to ask ourselves what frequency is. So you should all know all this. This is all school physics stuff, right? Frequency is related to the period of the vibration, and we express it in hertz, or cycles per second. And the period is the time it takes for the cycle to repeat. So if we have 22 events in 50 milliseconds, we've got a 440 hertz tone. And here I have exactly the thing, which is a tuning fork, which is set for 440. And so if I do my knee in, that's vibrating at that rate, and we're hearing a 440 hertz tone. Okay, very straightforward. And what that means is that those waves are propagating from left to right, and the speed at which it's doing that is of interest, and we'll come to that in a moment, but we're also interested in the wavelength, okay, which is the distance between the peaks or the troughs. And there's a very simple expression here which relates the two, and you'll see that within this expression there is we've got the speed of sound in the medium, which allows us to sort of switch things around and show that the speed, the frequency that you perceive, is a function of the speed of the arrival of the sound waves, which explains the Doppler effect. So the Doppler effect is when you've got a moving sound source, and so the speed of arrival is different because the sound is moving, and that causes you to perceive the frequency as being different from what it really is. So here's a Doppler effect. Should be. Oh, did I turn the sound right now? Maybe I even turned it off. Okay, this is... So that's high, coming towards you, now it's going away. So you perceive that change in frequency, and that's simply because the rate at which those wavefronts are hitting you changes because the velocity of the sound is also affected by the velocity of the sound source. Okay. Okay. So we can work out then for the tuning fork, when I just generated that 4/4 THz tone, then given the speed of sound in air, the wavefronts were about 78% of a meter, 78 centimeters. Okay. So if the speed of sound is faster, like in water, then the wavefronts will be further apart. And if they're in, the wave, I'm getting this horribly wrong. By the way, it's 2 o'clock in the morning for me. We just come back from Japan. Okay, so you can read all that, right? It's longer in a denser medium. Right. Okay, so we can simulate some of that in PD. So what I've got now is a bunch of impulses. So if I turn the frequency right down, this is not a tone anymore. It's actually a series of pulses, okay? And if they come at you fast enough, you will hear a tone. And what we've got up here, I can set the various media, whether it's air, water, or steel, and that will change the wavelength and the period. So my question to you is, here's a tone, let's set it to 440. And it's currently set to air, if I switch to water, what is going to happen to the tone? What change in frequency would you expect? If I switch to water? Increase? Lower? There's one other possibility. Let me click. So, I'm going to click on the water, and then I'll click on the steel. You'll see the wavelength changes and the period changes. There's absolutely no difference in the sound, because it's not coming at us any faster. So when I said if you're in the water and you put your head under, you hear stuff. You don't hear stuff at different frequencies. It's coming at you faster. So you would hear the motorboat sooner, but you won't hear it at a different frequency. Right? Okay. So that's all predictable from the math there, which I just covered very, very badly. So we just did that. All right, okay. Sorry, straight back into PD. Right, so what I want to show you now is that within PD we can measure frequency. So we've got a signal and we want to know what frequency is at. We can put that into an algorithm, a process here. Very, very simple. In fact, it's working as I speak. And the key rather weirdly named thing here is called fiddle. So if I whistle, and you look at this slider, and you can also see the frequency I'm whistling here. This is all analysed by this function. This is the analog to digital converter. This is telling you the frequency in hertz. Okay, very, very straightforward. So I'm just giving you a taste of some of the things you can do in PD. Right. Let's get back on track. Okay, so there are different types of sound. You've already experienced one of these, which was an impulsive sound. And I just played a bunch of impulses, but the explosion was impulsive. Explosive, right? A hand clap is an explosive sound. It's an impulsive sound. But there's other types of sound, more noisy sounds. So the wind. All right? Or shh. That's a noisy sound. right? It's not impulsive, it's obviously continuous in some way. But it's very noisy, it's not very deterministic. But there's a repetitive sound. So the tuning fork was repetitive, right? It was a particular tone. Or a buzzing insect has a particular frequency. The wings are flapping at a particular rate, and that's creating a repetitive sound. Okay, so these are all just basically showing how the sound differs in its how it propagates. So an explosion is a wavefront which just rushes out. A noise means that the air is essentially being shaken about, and a repetitive sound means that it's being moved in a particular repetitive way over and over again. Very, very straightforward distinction. So this is a pure tone. This is quite special. Now, this is a repetitive, this is a very special repetitive sound. So what the tuning fork is repeating 440 times a second. There's no energy at any other frequencies. Likewise, when you whistle, that's more or less a pure tone, and that corresponds to a sine wave or a cosine wave, and we can characterize a sine wave. You should know all this from your previous studies. We can talk in terms of its amplitude, the frequency, the rate at which the sine wave is going, okay, and the wavelength. Three parameters: frequency, amplitude, and the phase. So that's when it starts. Okay, three parameters to characterize a pure tone, which is energy all at one frequency. Okay, so if we have pure tones at different frequencies, we've got different sine waves. Low frequencies are slow gradations, high frequencies are very fast variations. This is all very, very basic stuff. Now we understand something about all these signals, we want to ask what happens when they start to impact on each other. So if we have two sine waves, travelling through a medium, they are obviously going to interfere, because if one sound is causing the sound pressure to go up momentarily, the other sound might be causing it to go down momentarily. So what's going to work there? How are these things going to come together? Well, luckily, in a normal medium like air or water, the superposition principle applies, which means that they simply add. So what that means is that if you have two identical signals, they will essentially double up. But if you have them out of sync, they might even cancel each other out, just additively, if you see what I mean, right? So two pure tones with the same frequency, amplitude and phase, you will get the same frequency, but it will be louder, because they were just combined in a superposition sense. But if you have pure tones which have the same frequency and amplitude but opposite phase, so when one's going, from your point of view, one's going up and the other one's going down, they're going to cancel each other out. Whereas if they're both going the same, they're going to add up. Okay? So we can prove that in PD. So play with all these PD examples afterwards to convince yourself that what I'm saying is correct. Superposition. There you go. So here we've got another little bit of PD. We've got a tone here. Right, we've got a tone up here. I've only got one switched on at the moment. I can change its frequency. Okay, just a little bit higher, a little bit lower. And here I can switch on a second tone. And currently they're both at the same frequency. And they're in phase, so the output, and you heard it, when I switched on the second one, you heard it got louder, double the amplitude. But if I change the phase of the second one, first one rather, you see how the signals are now out of phase? So we've actually got, trying to get it there. So these are now pretty much out of phase. So when one is going up, the other one's going down, and we're basically putting two signals into the environment, but we're hearing nothing because they're cancelling each other out. This is a very important notion for reasons which you'll see in 2 seconds. So we've just seen that when different waves meet up with each other, they can superimpose additively, which means that they might increase or decrease in amplitude. It also, when a wave hits a boundary, like a wall, it's going to bounce back. So like on a seawall, when you see the waves coming in, and it's a nice seawall, you see the wave hit the wall and bounce back out again, and then you get interference between the incoming wave and the outgoing wave. And that can lead to very interesting effects, and we have a word for that, which is resonance. So if we have an enclosure, something with walls, and we emit sound, then we're going to get very interesting effects because of the reflective sound is going to impact on the outward going sound in interesting ways. If they interact constructively, we call that a resonance. So the cavity resonates when the sound and the reflected sound superimpose. If it's destructive, so that's constructive interference. If it's destructive interference, this is an anti-resonance. So now they're going to destroy each other. Okay. So, any acoustic enclosure, this room or a small box, has resonant characteristics. It's a function of its dimensions. You can imagine that. You've got these waves moving about, and as they hit the boundaries and they come back, obviously if it's a bigger box, there'll be different effects than if it's a smaller box. The size and shape of the box matter. Also, the reflection will depend on the properties of the walls. So if it's a soft, absorbent wall, maybe no sound will be reflected back. But if it's a very high-density reflective surface, a lot of energy will be bouncing back. So an enclosure with very rigid walls will be have lots of resonances, and an enclosure with soft, sort of sound-absorbing walls will have no resonances. I think I've pretty much said all that. So we're going to look at a very, very simple acoustic chamber or enclosure, which is a tube. And the reason we're, just to give you an upfront, the reason we're doing this is because we're gradually approaching what's going on in here, because this is a kind of acoustic enclosure, right, which you're using when you're speaking. So that's why we're going through this. All right, so a tube. If we have a tube which is open at both ends, then this equation here explains gives the frequencies of the resonances. So if we put energy into this tube, it will enhance any energy which is at the frequencies given by this formula. And that's because the waves resonate with the length of the tube. So for a tube, we're only interested in the length. Doesn't matter how wide it is, it's only the length we're interested in. And it's a very simple formula, right, which gives the frequency where the speed of sound is V, the length of the tube is L, and N is some kind of positive integer. So what this means is there will be some base frequency where there's some resonance, and it will be twice that, four times that. Also will be resonances. Those are called harmonics. So we have the fundamental resonant frequency of a tube in this case, open at both ends, and the harmonics. So there'll be energy at the fundamental and at multiples thereof. So that's a tube which is open at both ends. If we have a tube which is open at one end only, the formula is slightly different. And you can see why, because the way the waves fit in, right? And the reflection you get at the closed part is different from the reflection you get in an open part. So the equation is slightly different, but it's the same principle. There's still a resonance, a basic resonance, and there will be harmonics. And this is just because as the waves are moving around in the tube, they will interfere constructively and destructively and cause energy to increase at some frequencies and decrease at other frequencies. Okay, so the general formula looks like this, right? A little bit complicated, but basically X1 and X2 reflect whether the ends are open, both ends, whether open or not. ones and zeros or anywhere in between, and that gives you the frequency then of the fundamental and the different harmonics. So, if we run the maths here on that equation, if we take a 25 centimetre cylinder, open at both ends, it will resonate at 686 hertz. Now that doesn't mean if I hold a 25 centimetre tube up, you're going to hear 685 hertz. We have to put some energy into the system. Okay? So, let me hold up a 25 centimetre tube. There we go. Open at both ends, you can't hear a thing. But if I blow, do you hear that? That is pretty much 686 hertz. And if I had the time, I could do that into my frequency analyzer and tell you what frequency that is. I'm putting energy in. I'm putting noise in, which actually has energy at many frequencies. But the resonance here is enhancing it at one frequency, which is why you're hearing it. Okay? So that's the fundamental. But there's also energy, which is harder to pick up, at the first harmonic, which is 1372, second harmonic, 2058. These are multiples of 686. Now, next one down, open at one end, closed at the other. So I can do that. Got a closure here. Let's pop that in. All I did was put a stopper on. You can tell that's significantly lower, right? And that is at 343 hertz, which is actually half. Right? Now, some magic. Let's not do that. Let's go from... Okay? So by changing the characteristics of this end, I'm gradually lowering the fundamental resonant frequency of this tube. I'm not doing anything different with my mouth. All I'm doing is changing the resonant characteristics of this tube. Now, closed at both ends, you'll see that that fundamental goes down to zero. Now, this is really hard to do because if it's closed at both ends, I can't really get a sound out of it. But I'll give it a go. Let me do that. So that's at one end. Now I've got to sort of put my finger across. You can sort of hear it going down, but it's quite tricky because I can't put the energy in. Okay, but what the formula tells us is that the fundamental essentially goes to zero, which means that the first harmonic is at 686, which you'll notice is actually the same as the fundamental open at both ends. So when it's closed at both ends, it's behaving very similarly to when it's open at both ends. But the relationship is actually that everything is shifted down. All right. Now, that's a 25 centimetre tube. What happens if we shorten it to half its length? Let me go backwards and forwards. Basically, you see the numbers have doubled. So, of course, I have a 12.5 centimetre tube here. So this is the 25 centimetre closed at one end. And this is the 12.5 centimetre, which is twice the frequency. Oh, I forgot to put the end in. Too much going on. Right. So can you hear that one is twice the other? Exactly as the maths predicts. Right? So we know a lot about tubes now. Right. Good. Right. Why is he doing all this? Because the human vocal tract, to a first approximation, is a tube. In the adult male human being, it's approximately 17.5 centimetres long. So, of course, I have a 17.5 centimetre tube here, because I've got the real thing right here. And it's approximated by a tube which is closed at one end because of your vocal cords here, and open at this end because that's where the sound comes out. So, this is a 17.5 centimetre tube, sort of halfway between the others. There's another way of getting the resonance here. I'm putting sort of wind noise in, but I could just put an impulse in. Can you hear the particular frequency? same. 17.5 centimetre tube, closed at this end, open at that end. The math tells us the resonant frequencies. Okay? Everybody got that? It's kind of rather crucial. So what that means is that the fundamental resonance of an adult male human vocal tract is around 490 hertz, and then there are harmonics at 1470, 2450, and whatever, predicted by that formula. But the basic idea, closed, open, closed, open. All right? Good. Well, we've done all that. Right, and as well as doing it live with my own vocal tract, we of course have a PD simulation of exactly that. So, resonant tube. So this is a fun bit of PD to play with. This is a simulation of using that formula of the resonance of a tube. Now, in order to simulate a resonance, we need a filter. I will be explaining what filters are much later on, but for now, just think of an electrical filter as something which is essentially modelling a resonance. It's enhancing energy at a particular frequency. So there's some filters in here, and I'm putting a noise source in. So what we've got here is the length of the tube, I can vary, and whether it's open at the left or open at the right. It's currently set to be open at the left, closed at the right. The default is a 25 centimetre tube. So just to remind you, this is what a real 25 centimetre tube sounds like. And here is the computer simulation. Exactly the same. And if I open the closed end, which is exactly what I demonstrated with my hand, close it again, make a 17, and if I half the length of the tube to 12.5 centimeters, frequency doubles. And if I change it to a human length, it's in the middle. So have a play with that, and then you'll really understand something quite important about what's going on here, but we will be going into a lot more depth about that next week. Okay. Right. So, as I said, a tube doesn't make any noise at all. I have to put energy in. The word we use for that is excitation, or the excitation source. Okay. So to get any acoustic structure to resonate, we have to put energy in. Did you notice, by the way, the tuning fork, if I just had it vibrating, you wouldn't have heard it at all. I put it on here, so it was exciting this whole surface. So this whole surface was radiating too. That's why I did that. So we have an excitation, a sound source, and we know there are different types of sound: impulsive, noisy, and repetitive. So we can have these three different types of sound source: impulsive, noisy, repetitive. Okay? All of these signals have energy at lots of different frequencies, and that makes them very interesting and makes them worthy of analysis. And so when we put a sound source with energy at different frequencies into a physical structure which has resonant characteristics, it's going to change the distribution of energy at different frequencies. Right? Now, just to be absolutely clear, when I was blowing into that, the blow pretty much has the same amount of energy at all frequencies. You could think of it as kind of white noise. But by blowing into the resonant cavity, what we're hearing is all that energy ending up more or less at one frequency. That's the resonant characteristic of the enclosure. Okay, so I've said all that, and it is a kind of filtering, which is why in PD we could use an actual filter function to simulate it. Okay, so this is... none of this should be that unfamiliar to you, because it's the basis of generating sounds in these different ways is the basis of most music in most cultures, right? So we've got impulsive, which is essentially percussion, like a drum. We've got noisy, which is essentially like a wind instrument, like a flute. And we've got repetitive, which could be like a string instrument, like a violin. Right? So, little test to finish off with here. I'm going to show you a bunch of instruments, and the question to you is the excitation impulsive, noisy, or repetitive? Here's number one. Right, did you get that? So, impulsive, noisy, repetitive. What am I hearing? Yeah, don't be shy. Impulsive is correct, yes. That's impulsive. Right, next one. Impulsive, repetitive, noisy. I'm hearing a strong repetitive from here. I heard some noisy. It's repetitive. If you play a brass instrument, if you don't play a brass instrument, maybe you don't realize, but if you play a brass instrument, actually it's the lips that are vibrating together, generating a repetitive excitation, which is then going through the resonance structure of the instrument itself. And of course, in a brass instrument with controls or with trombone, you're changing the length of the tube. And as we've seen, that will change the frequency of the resonances. Impulsive, noisy, repetitive. I'm hearing repetitive. Everybody's saying repetitive. That is correct. In fact, the action of the string is it's effectively like lots of little hooks pulling on the action of the bow, rather, pulling on the string. What about that? Impulsive, noisy, repetitive. I'm sort of hearing a bit of impulsive. It is impulsive, of course. The keys are operating hammers. You don't get much more impulsive than a bunch of hammers, right? Hitting the strings. The strings are resonating. In this case, it's not a cavity. It's a material which is under tension. That's resonating, but you're putting energy in by hitting it with a hammer. Impulsive, noisy, repetitive. Anybody play the flute? I'm not hearing anything for this one. What do you think? Noisy, I'm hearing. Thank you. Yes, it's noisy. Whoa, go back. It's noisy. Correct. It's indeed noisy. Because what you're doing is you're blowing across. Okay. What do you think of the next one? Oh, dear, oh, dear. Right, okay. Give it all away then. Right, let's try again. What about this one? Pretend you didn't see what happened. Oh, God. Hey. Okay, well, you get the idea. So you know what's coming, right? Impulsive, noisy, or repetitive. Thank you. Yeah. It's all. Now, 2 points here. One, you don't only speak with this. You use this for all kinds of things. Making noises for all kinds of reasons. Speech and language is only one of them. And it involves all the mechanisms that I've talked about. So it's not just they've got the resonant tube, but you're exciting it with noises, with repetitive stimulus, which is your vocal cords, or even with impulses. Some languages even have very exotic click-like sounds which they generate with their mouth. Okay, question? But noisy is a random sound source. Repetitive is a repeating sound source.
Oh, it's the only one that's repeating.
Yeah. Okay, good. We got there. Sorry about the slight mess up with the end there. So, hopefully you'll now appreciate something a bit about what sound is, but most importantly, you realise how the environment shapes the sound, and in particular, how this particular physical structure shapes the sound. And next week, we'll be looking at precisely how this mechanism works. Okay, thank you. Oh, great. Oh, dear.